niece, uncle came over. And so one day he came over, it had changed. He said, hey man, he said, this is what's going on with me. He said, I've been trying to get this cocaine off the ground. They call it crack.
Now, when is this?
This is in 83.
Summer?
Late 83, probably.
Was it late 83?
Was it summer 83?
No. Was it? It could have been late 83 or early 84. And the reason I'm saying this right here. Yeah, and the reason I'm saying this right here, because I took a major bus. I took a major bus in September of 84, and I wasn't selling that long. That's how I can kind of keep the time frame in perspective.
It was probably early 84. It was winter time.
I thought it was early 84 is when all that shit happened.
Yeah, early 84. And he was telling me things weren't going right, wherever he was doing it at. But I had to set up, he said.
As far as the spot.
For it's a spot where it can really go down it. And I told him I really wasn't interested, however, you know, but he's told me, he pleaded with me to give him 24 hours. And I'm like, oh, okay, what that happened? And I had my twin brother was there at the time, too. He was just totally against it. He's like, oh, no, but you don't really need to fuck with him. You know, he's a bum. He always begging. You know, he just running all the negativity about Perry, you know, why I shouldn't do it. And I'm saying to myself, 24 hours is not going to hurt. I said, okay, it ain't going to hurt. And I remember getting him the money, which was $2,500 for an ounce.
For an ounce?
For an ounce. Well, it actually costed more. I found, no, 28. Actually, the ounce actually costed $2,800.
Oh, you had to pay 100 a gram even if you were buying an ounce?
Yeah. Yeah, it costed $2,800. And I remember the guy coming over and he cooked it up and chopped it up, man. He had the glass little square on the table with, he said he was dime rocks or whatever it was, but he had it all lined up. And so Perry left and he said, oh man, this is gonna take off big, man. He said, this is gonna be really big. You'll see. And so 24 hours came, I think he made $20 or $30.
No.
Nothing. And Perry felt it so bad. Because he know I gave him his 24 hours. He said he promised me he would pay me the $2,500 back and I can have the cocaine because there's nothing that he can really do with it. And I'm like, man, it ain't no big issue, man. You good, no problem. And that day, the next day, it was fly guy turn to work. And I was gone. And fly guy just kept paging me. And I guess I called him. I don't know how it was. I called him. He said, man, you need to come back. And I was like, is everything okay? He said, yeah, but you. He said, I don't even want to tell you now. He said, because if I tell you now, you're really not going to believe me. I said, man, what the fuck done happened?
Yeah.
He said, don't worry about it. Everything is okay. You just need to, you know, get back to the house. And I said, fuck it. I was only about 4 or 5 blocks over. You know, I jumped in my car real quick, man, and shot over there. And he opened the door up, and he was kind of like laughing. And I was like, man, what? He said, you ain't going to believe it, B. I said, man, will you just tell me what happened? He said, man, about $30,000 worth of customers and came over here. I said, $30,000? He said, I told you weren't going to believe it. He said, man, I was so scared, man, I was finna close and leave. He said, the police was out there directing traffic.
You mean there was so many cars on the block?
Yeah, I said, what happened? He said, they wanted some cocaine. He said, I sold it, what I had, I sold that in 5 minutes. And they just kept coming. And then somebody knocked on the door. He said, see, that's one of them there. Then somebody else knocked. He said, see, I'm trying to tell you, man. He said, they want it. And I said, man, where we going to get the shit from? What did he say? My brother. So we called his brother. His brother came over thinking that we want some weed. Then I told him, no, we don't want no weed, man. We want some cocaine. And he kind of looked at us strange then, like, some cocaine? When y'all start dealing in cocaine?
Yeah.
We like today, you know? And that's when he charged us 28. I gave Perry 25. He charges us $2,800 for an ounce. He said, I'll be right back. Gave him the money right then. About an hour later, he was back. And I didn't even know how to cook it up, so I was giving the customers powder and told them they had to cook it up themselves. That's how lame I were. I didn't have a clue how to cook it up. And so that went on for like 5 days. Traffic had slowed down because they wasn't getting crack. They was getting powder. And so I said, man, I got to do something. And I said, what I'm going to do is I'm going to put like a gram in the baller and hook it up. And that's what I did. And it
so
came.
Who told you how to do that?
I just did it on my own. And so I put a little powder in it, man, and I did it and played with it, heated up. Then that rock fell to the bottom and I chopped it up. And then some customers showed up when I did it. Fly guy took it to him while I was playing with it. He sold it out and I was still playing with it. Rock drop. And I was just doing this all fucking day and night.
So you cooking it as they're coming?
As they coming. And so I don't know what it was. I seen something. I don't know what it was, man, but that coffee pot. I said, damn, how all this heat can be on this coffee pot and the coffee pot don't break because I see people's making coffee with it. So I went and got a coffee pot.
Pyrex.
Yeah, Pyrex. So I got the coffee pot and I put an ounce in it. And I did my little thing in it and it fell to the bottom and I leaned it to the side and it filled in the crevices of it and I kind of rocked with it and played with it. And a whole ounce came out. And I sit there and chopped a whole ounce up. While I was doing that, Fly Guy was at the motherfucking door just serving it. And as we doing it, man, shit just started getting out of hand. Just hallway line. Where Fly Guy say, man, y'all got to get out the hallway. Y'all got to get off the streets. Y'all come back in 15, 20 minutes.
I give the CIA a total credit for sponsoring and initiating the entire consciousness movement. The CIA funded and supported and encouraged hundreds of young psychiatrists to experiment with this drug.
As the 1950s dawned, middle America was moving to new suburban homes. They were filling them up with the shiny new gadgets and other sundry props of the mass consumption culture. Something else was going on under the surface. Under government and medical supervision in psychiatric sessions on university campuses, in private labs, in prisons and sanitariums, there were people taking LSD. Sometimes they knew they were taking it, sometimes they didn't. LSD permanently changed America. The first drug that the intelligentsia and social elites picked up on as a tool for personal development. For enlightenment, even. For a brief moment, taking LSD was akin to a religious sacrament, but it was also a dark Pandora's box. The CIA tried to use it as a mind control drug on US citizens, and LSD helped birth the drug culture that still pervades America today. During this story, we will meet brilliant scientists, philosophers, naive young geniuses, and murderous motorcycle gangs. We will see the Holocaust camps of Nazi Germany, the salons of 1950s Hollywood, and the forgotten back alleys of mid-century America.
They said the feds had found this tape of this, have this tape of this large drug family on the east side of Detroit, and they are the biggest. So my first impression was it was an informant was filming this drug dealer.
Did you think it was you?
No, never thought anything like that. That never entered my mind. Never entered my mind. I didn't know who it was, but I was saying, damn, who is this, you know, my mind is on an informant that filmed people's doing something and handed this information over to the feds. I never knew anything about a raid. They had found the tape and they was going to be airing it on this particular night. So I went over to my girl Keela house that lived it on Wifford. And a lot of my friends went over there too. We all went over, we over there smoking weed. They drinking, they bumping the music, and man, the news came on, man. We just sitting there just like normal. And the first motherfucking name they said was the Chambers family. I'm like, who? Chambers family? The fucking Chambers family? They're like, you! They talking about you, BJ! I'm like, me? How in the fuck they talking about me? And I'm saying, oh my God.
Fucked.
You know, I was just threw off.
Yeah.
And then they started talking about how they came up with this tape. You know, yeah, I'm bouncing in this van and I'm sitting back on this car, you know, strategy. You know what? I never had an exit strategy, you know, and because I was addicted. Remember, I had started so young. You know, I had been to jail, got out, had good attorneys, you know. One, you know, it's like this right here. My moms didn't worry about me. My dad didn't worry about me. You know, they weren't hearing about, oh, BJ was in a shootout, or BJ had to shoot some people, or he had to beat some people, or he strung out on heroin on a crack, or BJ this, or he, you know, got liver cancer, or he went blind. Somebody didn't poke this. It was just all good news about me always. And so I was relaxed. Well, hell, people were turning into pill heads in front of me. They had turned into heroin heads in front of me.
It's not your fault.
Yeah, I'm smoking marijuana. I'm out there with the alcoholics on the corner. You know, hell, a problem is just another problem in our mix. All the peoples I got with that was with me daily were some very good soldiers. I mean, man, they weren't bringing no more heat to me than that was going to come anyway.
If it wasn't for Colbert,
the money had already been gone. Now I had some money left in the streets. People said, owed me. Yeah, when I got indicted, I probably wasn't making no more than like $30,000, $40,000 a day. Yeah, by choice, because I was dwindling down like I did before when I had the 27 houses. Man, this is too much. It's too much going on right now. You know, let's drop these down. Don't open no more up. The same thing with them. You know, I had found apartment building, a couple other spots. Man, it was doing good. Hell, I was surviving, making plenty of money. People still making big payrolls, getting big pay. I had plenty of money to hold 9 yards. And a few incidents had happened where they had ran through our spots. And right at the end, one of my last buses, I started banging on the door. And then one of my buddies went to the door and said, man, how can I help y'all? He said, open the gate. He said, motherfucker, you don't have no warrant. He slammed the gate on him. When he slammed the door on him, and he started taking the ram, beating up against the gate. And then that's when we started to try to flush the cocaine down the toilet. But we couldn't. And then when I seen that the gate was given and the door was given, I told everybody, get out the bathroom, get out the bathroom. Everybody came out the bathroom and just like sit on the couch. And then that's when they went in and found that it came up to 448 grams of bagged up crack cocaine. 4 pounds of marijuana, and they took me, my brother, my cousin, and Elaine, the girl that was upstairs. They took us all down. Yeah, one of the reasons why we never, and I'm assuming this, right, why we never got robbed, because there was never anything to rob in the houses, because when we dropped things off, within minutes, on a lot of occasions, we was out.
10,000.
Yeah, we could drop 10,000, man. 15, 20, 30 minutes later, we there to pick that up. Yeah. Just that quick. And workers all day saying, we out. We out. Go down the street to someone else's house. Or Billy Bob or Joe Blow around the corner. Go to their house. They got some pebbles around the corner for you until we get back.
How many stash houses did you
have? Probably as far as money.
How much stash cash at one time you think you had?
Oh, man. At one time, maybe about 30, 40 million.
What happened to it?
It's a long story. that was going to have to be an untold story right there for some time. Yeah.
You think you had $30 million?
More. Yeah, I'm running through $250,000 a day. You can't buy that many cars.
Put it this way. I used to sell everything.
It's a long story, man. That's a story within itself. That's a story within itself.
The movie industry saturating the black mentality with a death wish.
Street corner indoctrination, it's overpowering.
Drugs were in the black community. Nobody really cared.
The African American community has quite a debt to what we would consider a criminal enterprise.
According to leading researchers, Negroes buy more quality products than any other comparable United States group.
Their parents had struggled and marched and wanted to make sure that they were extremely successful and to go as far as their talents could take them, suddenly got involved in drugs, and the drug was heroin. So it was just destroying the African-American community.
And I am a revolutionary.
We don't want welfare colonialism in the black ghetto. The basic issue has to do with whether or not we can control some employment for ourselves.
White powder, black power is the story of how the illegal drug economy was the first truly large and widespread capital building tool for African Americans.
I mean, they may be colorful, they may be glamorous, they may give turkeys on Thanksgiving, they may support a little league baseball team, but they're selling a substance that's gonna kill your child or your grandchild.
I'm not condoning what they do. What I'm simply saying is that there are many on that playing field. And so when we demonize one group and then another group, we just kind of smile and look the other way.
Jews, the Irish, I mean, as every group in America has attempted to go to the next level economically, the story of organized crime and narcotics has played a part in it.